Hi, and welcome to Matrix Moments. My name is Rajinder, and I'm joined today by Avnish, Founder and Managing Director at Matrix, and Sanjot Malli, Consumer Sector Lead at Matrix. Thanks, guys, for doing this. Today's podcast is on consumer brands and why India is ready for a new set of VC-backed companies targeting this opportunity. As Matrix, we've been investing in the consumer sector for a while now, Avnish. I think I can remember, you know, investments in W, which went on, scaled up, and we successfully exited. Now it's a public company. I remember Chumbak. There were many healthcare investments as well that we made. And then over the last year, Sanjot, we've made six investments in the consumer brand sector. Why the sudden interest in consumer brands by the broader market? I know we've been doing this for a while. What's changed in the market? What's new in the market? And what's our thesis on this sector?
So let me first welcome Sanjot, given it's his first Matrix Moments video cast, and hopefully you'll do a lot more. He actually got us started, so I'll let him talk about. I had not heard of this term DinWeb until I think two of you had some thesis document. So I'll let him comment on that. But consumer as a sector for Matrix has been important from the start. I mean, even our internet investments, and I think we'll contrast that in this podcast at some stage. But why don't, Sanjot, you talk about the whole DinWeb and thesis?
Yeah. Thanks, guys. So let me answer your question, Rajinder, first. You mentioned, you know, why consumer brands make sense for India at all, right? Not just from a Matrix perspective. I think you really have to zoom out and think about where India is in its economic journey today. We are at the beginning of what's called the middle income journey, right? We've just kind of hit the $2,000 of GDP per capita mark. This is where a lot of the emerging markets around the world kind of accelerate their economic growth. Hopefully, we'll see the same path. But what's really unique about India is that India is the first major economy where internet penetration has preceded economic growth. So while we are relatively still emerging in our income, so relatively poor as a country, we do have access to the internet. And people, you know, in small town India and villages are seeing content from around the world the same day a person in New York or San Francisco will. What that means is that aspirations are global for Indians, but access remains an issue, both in terms of affordability and distribution. And I think that's where fundamentally homegrown consumer brands make a lot of sense for India, because you can create very, very high quality aspirational products at affordable prices and give to this new aspiring sort of middle class of India. And I think that's what I'm very, very excited by.
And you know, if you layer in, so there is this aspirations, Maslow's hierarchy. I mean, we talk about the fact that, you know, we look at different markets and we say, hey, people are different. People are not different. And I may sound too much of a capitalist, but their economic levels are different. At similar economic levels, in aggregate, people behave in a similar fashion. And that's the classic Maslow's hierarchy. So to his point, there is lack of access, yet aspiration, and the fact that there is some level of leapfrogging because it's internet first. But you can also layer in one more thing. At least it seems on the surface that this set, call it millennials, which you are bumping against, he is, I am in my mind. The existing brands may not be an asset. It may be a liability. I know in a lot of service brands, you know, even things like banking, the brands that our parents' generation would consider this is the solid brand, my generation is neutral and you're probably negative. And the younger ones are even more negative. So there is this gap also saying, what existing brand? I'm open to experiment. And there is this experimental nature. So I think it all kind of comes.
And actually, sorry to interrupt you, Rajinder. But to that point, I think a lot of the new age brands, what we call DinWebs, right? Digitally native, vertically integrated brands, are actually focusing on a specific TG as opposed to just a product, right? To that point. Because there are certain TGs, they could be millennials, it could be the Gen Z, generally the younger, more connected population that incumbent brands find harder to target and acquire, which new age brands, both through new distribution and better branding and marketing and packaging, can target and acquire and really retain. I think that's where the real value lies.
Maybe for listeners, actually, this DinWeb thesis that, you know, we've coined, and maybe speak a little bit more about that. Yeah. What's the digital consumer? I think everyone understands, but what's the rest?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think especially from a venture funding perspective, I think it's a question we've really debated, right? While the consumer thesis in itself makes a lot of sense, yes, there will be lots of Indian brands, but are they investable as a venture opportunity? And I think that's where the digitally native, vertically integrated brands become very interesting. Traditionally, I think there are three things, sort of the holy trinity one looks for as a venture investor. You want deep markets, you want high returns on capital, and you want non-linearity in scaling, so fast scaling businesses. Traditionally, consumer businesses have been deep markets because people spend a lot on that, but they haven't been high return on capital or non-linear. And I think that's what the internet has changed today. And that's the DinWeb thesis, right? Because you can target customers directly through the internet, both acquire them in terms of digital marketing and distribute, deliver to them directly. You can scale much, much more quicker. And because now India and China both have high, large outsourced manufacturing bases, you don't have to have that much capex to produce high quality products. So you can literally control the most important things in-house, which is the quality, but produce outside, which affects your returns on capital. So every dollar invested can get you far more in market cap creation and do so much, much quicker. And finally, the most important thing, the moats in this business arguably are higher than most internet businesses because they're vertically integrated, right? For a lot of internet businesses, they're thin stacked, just top of the stack businesses. And so arguably they can be disrupted. These ones, while harder to get off the ground, are arguably much, much more defensible businesses in the long run.
But I struggle with that, Sanjot. Isn't the flip side of that, that, you know, anybody can start a, because you don't need manufacturing, anybody can start a brand and sell on Amazon or Myntra or Flipkart, and therefore the moats are harder.
The moats might be harder than a completely traditional brand, but when you compare it to pure tech businesses where there is no ownership per se of your customer, right? So what in my mind creates a consumer brand in DinWeb? I think it's ownership of the customer, right? That comes through distribution, that comes through marketing and speaking to that customer, right? It comes through packaging and branding. It comes through customer service, post-customer service, yeah, getting feedback and creating those feedback loops to improve products.
And I think therein lies the answer. I think the tricky piece is, and we haven't fully come up with a viewpoint here, but I think the key is, are you fully digitally native? Mm. Digital marketing is not digitally native. So our view is brand should be what, 60 to 90% own site?
Yeah, sales? Ideally in the steady state. Yeah.
And then have these loops where like some brands are, I know your A&E is doing that, right? They have like these QR codes and, you know,
yeah,
very high level of engagement.
Truly omni-channel, right? The transition from offline to online should be truly seamless. When you see a brand in a store versus seeing its website, it should look more or less similar. It shouldn't be, you know, this is online, offline. And that creates that sort of echo chamber, if you will, for that brand wherever you go.
So you touched upon product, maybe to make it real, I don't know if there are, you know, examples that you all have, but how do these brands think about product differently from traditional consumer goods companies? And is the product life cycle different or the iterations on the product different for a DinWeb versus traditional FMCG?
I think what he said, and I'll let him add, but I think the way they think about product differently is they don't think about the product. They think about the customer segment. So they go after one customer segment and they are trying to surround them with different products. The first product may be the thin edge of the wedge for the market, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I've been very positive so far, but let me give you the flip side. I think product cycles, to your point here, are slower than tech businesses. But like I said, what brands lack in non-linearity, I think they make up for in their moats. Let me flip the question. What is product market fit in this business? I think there are three levels of product market fit. One is product love. The other is quality of growth. And then the third is actual establishment of brand, right? In that sort of order, because love should ideally come. It's very difficult to measure love in life in general. It's very hard, especially in consumer brands, right? But I think it shows in high gross margins. It shows in cohorts. It shows in high repeats. Quality of growth shows in non-discounted sales. It shows in organic growth. And the ultimate moat is really brand. And that shows up when people, in word of mouth, when people are talking about it, when people are proud of recommending a brand to their friend, that's when you know a brand is really being established. And then you can really...
But you know, this is worth unpacking a bit more. So if you ask people who know this stuff well, what defines a brand? Or when do you know you have a brand? Some of the things he said are very, very important, which is the same line of SKU, is the sale growing is your wallet share within a particular customer growing? That's number one. Non-discounted sales. And we'll talk, I'll come back to, you know, gross margin and how margins are important here. But non-discounted, you know, we are all used to e-commerce sites just discounting stuff. How much do you sell without discounting? Some like Dimension or Portfolio, they don't discount, yeah. Right? Most of our brands that we're investing in are actually mass premium. They're not mass, they're premium. They believe that they are offering a value prop where they can charge a premium, typically between 25% and 30%. So same SKU growing. Then there is this thing of brand extensions. If you have real love from customers, you should be able to launch adjacent lines, and they should also track. Just coming back to gross margin for a bit, and one contrast with internet businesses. See, in my view, PMF is defined, you know, you have early PMF, product market fit, you have scalable PMF, and you have scalable profitable PMF. In internet type of businesses, typically we take scalable, if scalable PMF is happening, we take scalable profitable PMF risk. A lot of companies have discounted their way through to scalable, saying, if I have enough customers, I'll be able to charge enough. I don't think that works in consumer. I think in consumer, you need to have that gross margin. You need to know that you're going to be valued, because again, the non-linearity, some of these things that play out never play out in this side of it. Your operating leverage and because technology businesses, the incremental costs don't go up that much. You're just able to build margin in the future. Here it's very hard. So my advice to entrepreneurs and consumer is build profit. We will take scalability risk,
yeah,
but let's not take profitability risk. Let's grow with a bit zero or something close, such that you know that you're getting paid for what you're doing.
Yeah, and to that point, I think in most cases, consumer brands are disrupting an existing part of the economy, right? Unlike internet, where sometimes you're creating, in the largest outcomes, you're creating markets.
Yeah.
In this case, you are actually disrupting existing parts of the economy, which means you have very, very large incumbent players with large pools of capital to invest in marketing and branding, right? So without the gross margin, you really don't have much money to reinvest. So you need that firepower in terms of gross margin to be able to go up against a lot of the incumbents. And that actually, the beauty of brands is that scale actually begets scale if you do it well, because of the high gross margin.
So I'm hearing two different things. So one is around risk, and basically the risk here seems to be more on scalability. And you're saying once you've kind of achieved a certain amount of scale, given the gross margin profile of the business, scale begets scale.
Hmm.
So what are the risks in investing in consumer brands or building consumer brands in this new DenVib model?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give you mine. I think it's a very attractive market, which is what the thesis is all about, right? So it is easy to have false positives initially in this space, because you'll see a lot of high quality products targeting the affluent urban Indian scale to a certain extent very, very quickly, because it's high quality. These people have a lot of disposable income. They're easy to get to through the internet, through Instagram and so on. So you will see a certain amount of scale with good, truly good quality products. The issue is, how do you go from that 1 to 10 to 100, right? Like, how do you take that to a real IPO-able business? I think that's where the challenge in consumer brands lies, because you can charge a little bit of a premium and these guys will pay for it. But once you start going to tier 2, tier 3 India, the true middle class of India, they may or may not pay for the sort of mass premium product. So I think the trick really lies in getting that balance of quality, pricing and distribution right for the Indian economy.
So I'll put it differently. I see in non-consumer businesses more potential failure rate at 0 to 1, lesser at maybe 1 to 10, 10 to unlimited everywhere there is a similar issue. I see here the flip. I think a number of people, because of the factors that Sanjot articulated, wherein lies the opportunity of distribution, you know, market gaps and stuff like that, a lot of people are seeing that. And it's easier to get off the ground. And you don't need manufacturing. So I think there's serious copycat risk, and which in tech, because of just the nature of tech businesses, you're building with passage of time. So I think if consumer brands don't scale quickly, they may never scale. Because they may get, let's say you have a great product, somebody will copy you at some stage, right? And they have the same factors coming into play. So I do worry about, you know, the 0 to 1 will happen, but will a lot of them get stuck in the 1 to 10? And by the way, this has happened in other businesses. If you look at content production houses, historically, there's, I don't know, maybe 100 in India between 20 to 50 crores of scale. So there's the zombie effect, right? And it's not like they are not good businesses. They'll make money. Are they venture fundable, right? Mm. And I believe that product is a moat, unlike in tech, where with every passing month, there's something happening in the product, which is probably building a deeper moat. And I know it's a generalization. Here, that's not the case. Your product is launched in the market. It's there for everybody to reverse engineer. And it is not going to keep changing or iterating that fast, right? So then what are you able to do and how do you build that customer connect with enough scale? Because ultimately here, brand is the moat, right? That's a little bit of the worry I have.
Yes. So you had mentioned something earlier around, you know, building around that customer segment. How should founders think about it? Should they be doing that soon in their journey or should they be doing it after a certain scale, maybe after a few rounds of capital?
I don't know about rounds of capital, but they should not be doing it too soon. Ultimately, there has to be, you know, in almost all the consumer companies we have met recently, there has been a hero product. This is a business of first find your hero product. If the first product is not a hero product, keep iterating till you find your hero product, then build around that hero product. Because that product is becoming a hero because it is resonating with a certain TA. Then surround that TA as opposed to going after the first product, which may not be a hero product, and trying to surround that TA, which may not like it, right? So, and I think that's going to be the case in almost all our investments. Even Chumbak started as mobile, you know, accessories and stuff like that. And then over a period of time is now like a full apparel and clothing. But they had, their thing was the edginess. So they looked at the edginess and they said, okay, this customer wants edginess. What else can I do that's edgy for them? And where is their wallet share? Right.
Just to that point, I think the thing to keep in mind is the best brands are built by selling 10 products to one person and not selling 1 to 10. Right. Which means that you need to own your TG. I know I sound like a broken record, but that's kind of what the beauty of these businesses is, right? And it's not just qualitative. The math actually works. That those are the businesses where the LTV to CAC works the best, right? Because acquiring a new customer will almost always be in that same band of cost for most businesses, depending on your product. But it's if you can maximize the long-term value of each customer, which is essentially owning the TA, like you said, I think that's where the real high-quality businesses emerge. And connected to that, I think the internet lends itself well to that because subscription models, for example, allow you to do that. So the new age distribution lends itself not just through product, but also through distribution model. Harry's in the US is an example of that. And one of our portfolio companies, Country Delight, right, is an excellent example. Perhaps the first and only true consumer brand that has leveraged subscription. 98% month-on-month repeat.
It's truly DinWib.
Yeah.
Truly DinWib. Like you, I mean, we want to talk quickly about the company?
Yeah, yeah, sure. So Country Delight is a subscription-based fresh foods and beverages company. So it's starting with milk. Milk being the hero product. Milk, as you know, is highly adulterated as a product in India. So they have the highest quality and freshest milk delivered from farm to your home within 36 hours through the convenience of an app. And using that sort of that as a wedge, they're expanding into multiple categories of fresh foods, bread, ghee, butter, anything that's, you know, dairy, non-dairy, as well as other fresh foods related. And like I said, it's growing very quickly. And the beauty is in the repeats of the business and the cohorts.
I mean, I think the language being used, you know, in this conversation is very different from how traditional consumer brands would think. So for a company, for example, like, you know, Country Delight, traditional incumbents like a Nestle or a Danone or many others, how are they thinking about, you know, the evolution of, you know, these new DinWib brands? And what do you think is likely going to happen when they kind of pick up on this trend?
So, it's, I mean, hard to predict, but I'll tell you what's interesting about these new age brands to incumbents as far as, you know, what I've gathered. I think there are two main points. One is owning the TG point, especially if it's a target segment that the incumbents cannot or find it difficult to otherwise acquire. In this case, Country Delight's case, it is the trust of a mother, right? The most important switching point for a Country Delight consumer is when they have a child, because that's when you really start worrying about the milk you're feeding your child. And they have been successful in acquiring that TG and retaining that TG. So I think a Danone or a Nestle or whoever, if at some point they think about, you know, acquiring Indian mothers or urban Indian mothers, Country Delight is a very interesting example, right? Either organically, inorganically, who knows? But just that proposition is very interesting. That's one. And then the second is new age distribution, right? Because a lot of the older brands are very, very conventional general trade driven because they need scale of 1,000 crores, and the only way you get it is through general trade, or was conventionally. So they find it very hard to explore these new channels of growth. And I think, like I said, Harry's is an example of an acquisition in the US. And it was primarily not due because to the Blade. The Blade wasn't the innovation, right? The innovation was acquiring and subscribing to buying Blades online. And that was the driver. So I think new age distribution.
And I would say, look, you as a new brand will not beat one of the large incumbents in GT, general trade, modern trade, distribution, sales, feet on street. You have to beat them digitally. Country Delight, actually, I mean, not to over promote the company, but that it's an easy one because it's fully digitally native and integrated, right? But I would say the other brands, that's how they should think. They have to win digitally, which is our earlier point, which is it's not about digital marketing. It's not about Instagram. I think companies get it wrong. They think promoting on Instagram, that's all digital marketing. Are you digitally native in owning your customer from the transaction till post-transaction and getting them back? And I think that is an edge that is going to be very, very hard for the incumbents. The incumbents are watching. They are, I mean, you have spoken to some of their venture arms and some of their, you know, senior execs, and they are very clear that we don't mind these people getting there, and if we can, we'll acquire them. So they are watching closely, and they are very clear where their strengths are and where their weaknesses are.
One topic we haven't spoken of, but you know, just thinking about this modern trade, general trade point that you brought up, there's a lot of working capital in this industry. That's in inventory, or that's in, you know, receivables from trade. Sounds like the digital brands just have a completely unique approach to building.
Country Delight is negative working capital. It's negative working capital. That's the beauty of it. And subscription, right?
Yeah.
So subscription and digitally native, you get the money first, you pay later. It is flipping the model on its head. That's, like I said, that's an easy example because it's fully digitally native. The others have...
Yeah, I think there are structural advantages. Obviously, Country Delight is a great example because it's negative, but there are structural advantages to DinVibs that apply across, right? Because you have more line of sight into what the customer is buying, therefore you can plan better. And working capital management is nothing but common sense and planning, right? The reason conventional brands don't have very good working capital cycles is because they don't have that visibility. There are 5 layers of middlemen before you sell to the end customer. So you have to prepare for, you know, 180 days. But if you're selling directly and you have line of sight into which product is your hero product, you can plan better, right? And which are your new products. So your rotation of capital becomes much, much more quicker, as well as, you know, there are much better working capital management tools because it's all integrated. So you have much higher visibility through dashboards and so on.
And but even if you were, sorry to interrupt, but even if you were not selling, so I'm a big believer in, you know, directly selling on your own website. But even if you were not and you were selling through the marketplaces like Amazon, I think to his point, which is very key, their forecasting and planning tools are so good that if you are integrated, I think your inventory can be, you can effectively mimic a negative working capital even if you're selling on marketplaces.
So the million, I mean, not million, well, billion. tens of millions of dollars. Do you think consumer brands are going to generate the kind of outcomes and the kind of return characteristics that we've seen in traditional internet businesses?
I think the largest one might. I think the way I see it is that the bell curve will be flatter.
Yeah.
So what that means is maybe you won't have Flipkart is valued at 20, you know, Paytm 20, Oyo, Ola, they're all in the 6-10. Do I see that happening in 4-5 years? To be very honest, no. I think it'll be flatter, but you'll have a lot more hit rate. Number of companies will do reasonably well. And so the way I think of it is more unicorns, lesser decacorns and megacorns or whatever you want to call them.
But hopefully more predictable, right?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. It's flatter.
Yeah, exactly. It's flatter. Yeah. So more predictable, hopefully more defensible, but maybe not as scalable, but definitely highly scaled in the long run.
Aapka moo ghee shakkar, is that what they say? So
that's what Country Delight sells now, by the way. They
as
sell
long
ghee.
As it's thin whip ghee and sugar. Because we don't do ghee shakkar anymore.
On that note, thank you, Sanjot. Thank you, Avi. Enjoyed this one. And for founders out there, sounds like a lot of exciting stories over the next few years.
Thank you, Rajendra.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for listening. And you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.